The Riverlands are a dark and forgotten stretch of geography in Middle America, a shadowy liminal space where fear haunts the dark woods at night, and a place where haunted history comes together with the weird and the monstrous.
These are the stories from the Riverlands.
Well, friends, it's finally Halloween. We've been counting down the days as Halloween creeps closer out here in the Mississippi River Valley, and you can finally feel that shift in the air. The notoriously hot and dry late September and early October have reluctantly given way to the time of darkness out here in the Riverlands. It's finally here. The gateway. Crossing over from the days of scorching light to the days of cool, cold darkness. By the time the darkness finally takes control of the world in December, this night will be but a sugar-tainted, faint memory. But for now, decorations, both scary and adorable, dot all the lawns. Leaves have finally started to turn, and around here, the thoughts start to turn to spooky stories. Hopefully, you have enough candy to keep the hordes and princesses and ninjas and Star Wars characters at bay. The candy and the chocolate gods are pleased with your sacrifices. So happy Halloween, everyone, and we hope you have a great night.
Welcome back to part two of our Ghost Story Halloween special that kicks off season two of the Riverlands. When we started to collect stories for a Halloween episode, we had no idea we would get as many as we did. Some of the great people we have met had dozens of stories they can tell, and it's a real treat to be able to listen to all of them and then present the best and creepiest to our listeners.
If there is such a thing as the classic ghost story, the one that is considered to be the most quintessential, I feel that most of us immediately go to the haunted house. During the Halloweens of my youth, when the teachers began to put up those articulated skeletons and the laminated pumpkins, inevitably, there was always the haunted house. It was a Victorian or some other older home, two-story, with the shutters torn off, a pair of eyes peeking out of the darkness, maybe other monsters, and there was always a tree or an owl lit by the moon. The very definition, to most of us, of a haunted house.
From Scooby-Doo to the yearly haunted houses, both big and small, there's something particularly scary about being in a confined space in the dark. Confined spaces are a certain kind of horror, especially if you're anything like me. And of course, there might be something in there with you. And the knowing that you might not be alone in there just adds to this feeling of dread. Especially if whatever it is might not be alive and may have never ever been human to begin with.
The other local thing is actually my parents' house, which I have said was haunted since we moved in. I think I was 10. They don't believe me. They never have. But when I was, I guess I was in junior high still. If I was ever home alone, I could hear heavy footsteps walk through the kitchen, even though nobody else would be there. Sometimes I would hear a door, the kitchen door would swing open and bang against the wall anytime anybody came in. Or if the dog ran up the stairs and hit the door, she would just bang it as hard as she could. So it was a pretty common noise in our house, but I would hear it when nobody else was home. Right. And I would hear someone say my name. Very clear, just my first name. But it always happened when I was by myself. And their house is like a story and a half. So when we first moved in, my room was upstairs. And through the closet was the door to the attic. I think I was probably 12. The maybe 11, the first time something happened, and I had the windows closed. The windows were near the stairs. And I was on the opposite side of the room, and all of a sudden one of the windows shot open by itself. And I was terrified. I didn't know what to do because the only way out was to go past the window. But I finally got brave enough to go downstairs and moved my room downstairs shortly after. That was enough for me. So that became like a catch-all. It was a guest room, and it was a computer room, and it was just a multi-purpose space. So then we got a computer because it was the 90s and it was a big deal to finally get a desktop computer. And my friends and I would go up there to play on the computer. And I remember a friend being over one night and there was so much noise coming from the closet, like someone was in there just throwing things back and forth. And my friend said, "What is that? What is that?" And I said, "Oh, it's our ghost." Kind of teasing, kind of hiding how unnerved I was. But she said, "Well, tell it to stop." And I said, "Okay, fine. Hey, this is my friend and you're freaking her out. So stop throwing stuff around." And it was silent. So we left shortly after that. My parents always said it was because there was an old chimney and there were squirrels in there. But I've never heard squirrels make noises quite like that from anywhere. And then as years went on, there would be, you know, we'd take pictures and there would be orbs, but of course they could be dust. But when my kids were little, like babies, they would sometimes just stare at spots in the room where nobody was there. There was nothing to look at, and they would just be fixated on it. So that always left me a little unsure that we were alone.
Okay, when I was young, like, I don't know how old, 7, 8, 9, 10, somewhere in there. My bedroom, there was me and two brothers slept in there. And my bed happened to look down the hallway that you would get in there. And there was kind of a hallway. And then it had like a side entrance to the hall. I was laying there. I wasn't sleeping. And I heard a noise. There was stairs that was a two-story building, and I could hear somebody coming up these stairs, which was kind of unusual because I thought everybody was in bed. And anyway, I heard them just real plain walk up these stairs, and they turned at the head of the stairs and come towards that hallway, and they got all the way to the door where they would have entered the hallway, and they stopped. And I was looking down there, and I could see, and there was, you know, I kept thinking, well, who's standing there, you know? So I got curious, and I hopped out of bed, and I went down the hallway and looked out there, and there was no one there. And I thought, wow, that's really weird.
My grandfather on my dad's side, when he first got here from Czechoslovakia, he built a house in Jefferson County, and it was a log cabin. And it has a big stone fireplace. And fortunately, over the years, it was owned, after it got out of the family, it was bought by a man who does historic restoration. And it's beautiful. In fact, so a friend of mine from grade school, she knows these people real well that bought the house. And I ran into them at her birthday party, and they wanted me to come see the house and everything to show it to me. But as we were chatting at the party, it was really funny because I asked them, "Oh, has anything ever happened there?" Because we were talking about ghosts and things. And the lady said, "Yeah, you know, our son has several times seen this woman standing by the fireplace." And it's probably similar to what you're talking about, a big stone fireplace. And to see her standing there, and she looks full bodied. And she's not scary. She's just like a residual. She's just standing there because she would be cooking there or whatever years ago. And, so I said, "Really? I wonder, would he recognize her if he saw a picture?" And she said, "I think so, because I have a picture of my great great grandma and her two daughters. I have a picture of the three of them." So I thought, I wonder if it's one of them. So when I went out there to their house, they wanted me to come out to the house, and I went out there and showed, and he saw the picture, and when he looked at it, he pointed right away to my great great grandma. He said, "That's her." Yes. And he identified her, and I was like, "Oh my gosh." And he said, "That's her. I've seen her many times standing at that fireplace," and he identified her right away. And one thing cool too, after I was down there that day, they have a crank, like a phonograph with the horn on it and everything. You have to crank it to get it going with the record on. And they said that, because they were laughing about when I was there, that things are going to start happening since I was in the house. And then it was like a few days later, if they said early in the morning, that phonograph started playing on its own. And it, you have to crank it to make it work. And yeah, but they said, oh, it started on its own. I said, well, see, they were happy I was there that day. But yeah, I thought it was interesting that he could positively identify her. I mean, it wasn't like, oh, yeah, that might be her. He pointed straight at her, and that's her. He knew who that was.
Mom was gone somewhere. I don't know, her and Doreen both, so I was just me and Dad home. I was laying in the bed in our bedroom, mm-hmm. and then he was in the other bedroom, you know. It was bedtime. We closed the light, turned the lights all off and everything, and I was laying there, you know, and I heard him get up and walk, you know, and I said, but then I didn't hear like any of the door slam or anything else, whatever. And I hollered at him and I said, Dad, is that you? He says, no, I thought that was you walking through the house. So we both heard it.
But there wasn't
I don't know what it was. It was kind of creepy. But, I mean, at the time, I was, like, really scared. You know, I was like, being a kid, you know.
We lived in Kentucky when my husband was in the Army.
Right.
And I went down. He was deployed at the time. I drove down, and I bought a house in a day. I looked at three, and I bought one. And it was in this little community not far from the base. And it's just where you live when you're a young couple in the Army. And we're sure that that house was haunted. When we first moved in, when he got back from his deployment, we moved in about 2 or 3 weeks later, a month later, because we're moving states.
Yeah.
And I was unpacking a box one day. There were two bedrooms and a bathroom upstairs, and then one bedroom, a bathroom, a laundry room combo, mm-hmm. kitchen, open living room, dining room.
Sure.
And I was in our bedroom unpacking a box, and I just was overcome with this feeling. Like, it stopped me in my movements that our house was haunted. Like, I just knew it with every fiber of my being. This house is haunted. I have things in my hands. And I thought, how bizarre. What a weird thought. And I just went back to what I was doing. but then one day, our twins were little. They were, let's see, a year and a half or so at this time. So their rooms were upstairs, and Jack was upstairs asleep. Kendall was awake, and she was playing on the bathroom floor while I took a shower, because they were mobile enough where I couldn't leave anybody alone, because they'd get into all the things. And I heard our front door open and close, and it was shocking because that door stuck really bad. In fact, we replaced it before we sold the house, because you had to like throw your shoulder against it to get this door open. And I heard footsteps stomp up the stairs, go into the upstairs bathroom and slam the door. And I thought, oh, my husband must be home early and needed to use the bathroom, and I'm in this one. So I got out of the shower and I get Kendall and I come out to see why he's home early, because he didn't ever come home early, and he was not home. Our front door was still deadbolted. There was no one else there. Jack was still asleep upstairs. And then one day my husband was cleaning the bathroom, and he wiped down all the surfaces, and he said he wiped down the toilet seat, wiped down the lid, and turned to leave, realized he left his phone in there, and turned back, and there was a footprint on top of the toilet seat cover that he had just cleaned. Like a outline of a foot on top of the toilet seat. Yeah. Like someone had stepped on it to reach up above the window or something. And then another time he couldn't find his phone, and it was in his boot, like way in the boot, all the way at the toe. Which was really strange and not a place where he would ever leave his phone. And we kind of chalked it up to like, well, maybe one of the kids did it. Sure. Maybe they did, but with all the other things going on. But he and I didn't talk about it. We didn't talk about how we thought this house was haunted. And more than once I had that feeling of this place is haunted. But then finally we came home to visit family one weekend, and we drove separately. So we were on our way back down. There was about a 4-hour drive. And we were at Fort Campbell, Kentucky. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I mentioned which place. And he was ahead of me with the kids. So we got home, he parked, he got them inside, and he saw someone walk past the front window with long hair and a black jacket. And I had a black leather jacket that I was wearing that night. So when I got home, I found him in the front yard. And you know what? Maybe he called me. I think he called me and said, "Where are you?" And I said, "Oh, I'm just getting off the interstate. I'm 7 minutes away." And when I got home, he was in the front yard. I'm like, "What are you doing? Why are you out here?" And he said, "I have to tell you what happened." And he told me that he saw this person with long hair and a black coat walk past the front door. So he went to open the door because he thought it was me. And there was no one there. So he was outside checking to see if someone was in the yard, and there was no one there. So I went back to the driveway and I walked past the front window, and you would have had to be 7 feet tall to be seen from where the window sits. You couldn't even see the top of my head as I walked past the window in the bushes. And we were both like, these are all the things that have happened here and all the feelings that we have. But he was getting out soon, and we knew we were going to list the house like within weeks. So we just left it alone. And I have no idea if the people after had any experiences, but we just agreed to list that house and get out of there.
I find this story particularly interesting due to the comment about the entity being about 7 feet tall, an unusual height for the common everyday person you meet on the street for the most part. Numerous sources for us confirm that the average American man stands just under 5 feet, 10 inches tall. However, on the other hand, the list of strange entities that are regularly described as approximately 7 feet tall or larger goes on and on. Bigfoot encounters, regularly described as 7 to 8 feet tall, while the Boogerman or Boogeyman of Dug Hill Road, located near Jonesboro, Illinois, was described as between 7 to 8 feet tall and wearing a white shirt and scarf. And the strange entities known as either the Hat Man or the Slender Man are both known for their towering wraith-like silhouettes. The widely known fact that at least one of these final creatures I described was the creation of an early creative writing platform apparently has had very little to do with slowing down encounters with something that closely fits that description.
Sometimes the former residents of haunted locations seem to not mind that you're living in their houses today. Footsteps or an odd smell might all you'll notice that suggests that you're sharing your home with someone or something else. Maybe the occasional movement of objects, like a balloon or a ball, perhaps moved across the floor. I know that when I was growing up, whenever something went missing in the house, my family used to joke about a ghost who stole things. But sometimes things can become much more serious.
It all started in Jennings. My dad's house, he bought from a couple. They were named Mr. and Mrs. Smith. And Mr. Smith died in the house. And my dad always said, when we were little, he would always hear things going on in there. And he would see like shadows walking from one bedroom to the other bedroom or to the bathroom, but he never felt scared. Well, as my sister and I got older, we started hearing things, and we would notice like the light would just go off in the other room. Like, not the light bulb would burn out, it would just, something would go and flick the switch, or we'd see just random like shadows and like a tall, not really tall, like medium height man figure you would see, and we just always figured that was Mr. Smith. And we never felt scared or anything from that. And then as we got older, we started going out, and there was a house about two blocks down from my dad's house that was right next to the middle school in Jennings. And it was a two-story old abandoned, just gorgeous, gorgeous house. And we, my stepmother, Ashley, my friend Jessica, and I, we would go and drive up the driveway just to, because my stepmom would get like creepy feelings from stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And so she would drive us up there, and we'd be looking at it, and we'd see like figures in the window. And the one night we went there, and the light in the attic was like blinking. Like, it was really creepy, and nobody lived there, nothing. And then that, we would mess with that house for like, I don't know, a year or so. And then the school bought it, turned it into classrooms, and then shortly after tore it down. And I don't know why. So I like to think it's something creepy. my sister, she sent me two stories, and I'm going to read them to you.
Okay.
And these both happened at my dad's house in Jennings. She says, it was after one of the kids' birthday parties, which was my younger sister or my younger brother. We were cleaning up the house, and all the balloons that we blew up, we were popping them. Afterwards, we were sitting in the kitchen, and out of nowhere, a balloon rolled, not floated, but rolled like it was being pushed into the middle of the living room, stopped, and started spinning on the floor. She said, we just stared at it, and then our stepmom just popped it and threw it away. I was laying on the small couch, the one by the front window, so we could see into our room with Tyler, who's our brother. He was around two or three. We were singing the ABCs when suddenly he sat up and looked at our room, looked at me, then looked back at our room. I asked what he was looking at, and he said, who's that man in our room? I looked over, but of course didn't see anyone. Then Tyler just went back to singing his ABCs like nothing was wrong. She said she about shit herself because they were home alone.
Wow.
There would be nights when we would be sitting in my dad's kitchen after messing with that house in town.
Right.
And our dog, Cricket, she was a yellow lab. She was very good, very calm. And she would just, like, run to the window and look out and then run to, like, all the rooms in the house and then just lose it. Like, she was seeing something out there or something was in there. I don't know. Or she could have just been a crazy dog.
When we moved to Edwardsville, and I didn't know this until about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, the realtor that sold my parents the 5 acres in the house had to tell them, it was law, to tell them that the house was haunted. My mom and dad are like, okay, whatever, we want the house anyway. So they bought the house. My bedroom was in the back northeast corner of the house. I kept hearing noises, you know, just like, just whatever it is. Blamed it on the dogs, you know, the horses, whatever, outside, because the barn was right outside my back window. Then one day, my porcelain dolls, and I had over 100 of them, I think I had like 120, 130 of them, started flying across the room and crashing against the walls. Okay. Then one day, I was picked up off the floor and slammed against the wall, and the dolls were hitting me. The door was slammed shut. I could hear my mom on the outside, Kim, let me in, let me in. And it's like, Mom, I can't. I'm being held against the wall. I can't. My mom's like, what do you mean? Let me in. Finally, she yelled, whoever is holding my daughter hostage, you have to let me in. I fell to the floor. The porcelain dolls fell to the floor, and the door came open, and my mom was able to come in. And she's like, what are you doing? Of course, she sees all the broken dolls again. So she goes and gets the broom, you know, and she's accusing me of breaking my own dolls. Well, my dad's mom, my mom's mom, my mom, everybody, my aunts, uncles, everybody were had given me these dolls over the years. I now only have 8 of them left. And I went home and counted them after I told you I have 8 of them out of 100 and plus. I only have 8 of them left. So we're sitting there and a guy, and it's me and my mom after my dad worked nights as a mechanic. And my mom and I are in my room cleaning up these dolls and we see a guy walk down the hallway. And my mom goes, who the hell is that? You know, and it's like, well, I don't know. You know, I'm just in third grade. I don't know. You know, so she goes and looks out my bedroom door into the hallway and there's nobody there.
One of our favorite things to collect is local legends. We prefer to let the stories speak for themselves when it comes to this sort of thing. Local legends point to a time and a place and fade in and out of public consciousness. Stories like Zombie Road and the numerous crybaby bridges. Stories of hook-handed killers and murdered babysitters. Many of these stories originate from a time when the world moved just a little bit slower. When telling stories around the table or the fire at camp was something that families still did. And in some cases were passed down over and over in the retelling. Others had a core of a real event. But sometimes the script was flipped and the victim became the villain. And these events become repeated so often that, in the end, it becomes impossible to untangle where the objective fact ends and the story begins.
there's been this long legend of a Staunton witch that I remember hearing when I was growing up, and it still carries on today. Her name was Alice Soaps, and she's buried in the old cemetery in town. Her tombstone is not far from the entrance, down by a little creek, and it's in the shape of a sawed-off tree with a rope around it, and the rope looks cut. So the legend was that she was hanged for being a witch. And of course, there's variations where some said it was at the same time as the Salem witch trials. But if you look at the history of our town and the timelines, they don't really add up. But I can remember going out there even when I was a kid, and you just go out and visit the witch's grave. And I never had anything happen. But it's always been of interest to me. So I started to research it a couple years ago. And there were all kinds of stories that you could hear around town, but it turns out that she wasn't hanged. She died young after getting sick. If I recall, it was consumption, but she had swallowed a tack while at work. I assume she was a seamstress or something like that, and it stayed in her body. She never got it out. So then she was ill with some sort of respiratory illness later and died. But I did find out that mysteriously her three children all died in just a few years before she did. And then her husband remarried not too long after, and a few years after. And when I found his obituary, there was no mention of her or the first three children, only of his second wife and their family. But that's about as far as I got with that. And as far as the tombstone, around the time that she had died, that was really common for young people who had died to have tombstones of a broken rope or a cut down tree, because it was a symbol of a life cut short. So there's this big mysterious Staunton witch legend. And really, it's just a sad story about a woman who died when she was young. But people still go out there all the time. And I've been out numerous times, never had anything happen, but it is a fun local legend.
It was my dad's grandpa again that he'd always heard there was money buried. There was a pear tree out there just not too far from where he lived. And there was rumors that there was money buried there. But they told everybody, don't dig it up because it's blood money. Somebody was murdered over it. He got kind of curious and decided he was going to dig there. So he went out there and found a spot and dug. And he dug down a couple of feet, and there was a layer of leaves in there. And when he dug down a little bit, he thought he heard something moan, like, whoa. He jumped out of that hole and he buried it all again and went back home. There's been a few people seeing UFOs around here, and one guy over in Brownstown took pictures of it, and he had a whole picture, a bunch mm-hmm. of pictures, and I don't know, he worked up there in the factory where I worked for a while. I asked him about it. I said, what was about that? And he refused to talk about it, would not say anything. Yes, no, maybe, nothing. He just refused. But what I had heard was, see, he was a young kid, and he took these pictures, and then they put them out to, and I don't know where they went off, to the newspaper and this and that, said he saw a UFO and all this. And supposedly, somebody from the FBI come out and talked to him, and after that, he would not say anything about it after that at all to anybody. So who knows?
If you're from the St. Louis region, you've no doubt heard of the Lev Mansion. It's one of St. Louis's most famous historical homes and most infamous haunted locations. At its core, the haunting stories are the end result of a family torn by mental illness, suicide, and murder. The haunting has been well documented by numerous historians and paranormal investigators. And as you've already heard in episode 1, we've had multiple stories of the strange going-ons within those walls. However, down the street from the Lemp is a lesser-known historical home called Deminil House. Friends of the show, Edna and Catherine, used to perform reenactments at the home and shared with us a few tales of strangeness they experienced in the home.
yeah, my husband's had a couple of experiences at Demonel Mansion where I tend to see things more wispy, but he sees full figured things. Like, once at Catherine, he was at Demonel once, and he was bringing water down for an event and came through the back door, and Catherine was down there by herself, and I called her and said Mark was coming. And so he came in the back door of the house carrying this bottle of water. And when he came in, he saw, because Catherine's got brown hair, she usually wears it like in a bun or something, and he saw this woman with brown hair in a bun walking down the cellar steps, down the basement steps into the cellar of the house. And he said, "Catherine, I'm here." But this woman ignored him. He said it was a full-figured person. He thought it was Catherine. She kept going down the steps. And just then, Catherine comes walking out of the dining room saying, "Here I am." And they went downstairs to look for this woman, and there was no one down there. But he saw her full figure just like that. Well, that's what happened with Alexander, the issue with the painting that Catherine was talking about. Alexander Demonel was the son of Nicholas and Emily, who had built the home. And we had a portrait done of him, and we were going to have a portrait unveiling that day. And it was a hot summer day. The air conditioning was not working in the house. So we had all the doors, the big front door was open, which leads out to a covered veranda. And there was a lot of people there, but there were no reenactors in the house. Sometimes we have reenactors for things, but none that day. So anyway, my husband was walking around looking at things, and I was busy. And when we did the portrait unveiling, there's Alexander in this big portrait. And my husband says to me, "That's really neat that you got that reenactor that looks just like him." And I said, "We don't have any reenactors." And he said, "Oh, yeah, the guy was on the front porch. I saw him." And I said, "No." He said, "No, that guy, a guy that looks just like him." Anyway, he said he saw a man dressed just like that, who looked just like Alexander, was on the front porch of the house, kind of like leaning on the leaning over, looking down towards the Mississippi River, and he was just, you know, and he said he was full bodied. He thought it was a reenactor, and we were laughing about that later. Like, well, Alexander came to his portrait unveiling.
But famous historic homes like the Limp Mansion aren't the only haunted houses in the region by far. Dozens of lesser-known haunted locations are found in every town, every city, and every county of the Riverlands. Some of the spirits come with a dark and bloody past, like those at the Limp Mansion, and others appear to stick around because they still care for the places they lived or worked during life. Here's Laura's story from the Rose Hotel in Elizabethtown, Illinois.
Okay, it's near Halloween. My birthday is on Halloween, and I'm epileptic, so I can't, me and my friend wanted to take our daughters to a haunted house, but I'm epileptic, so we couldn't take them to, like, the scary ones in Evansville or anything like that. So I'm big in history, and I was like, well, the Rose Hotel's, like, really old, you know? I was like, well, if we take the girls there and give them some wind-up cameras, and we'll go ghost hunting, you know? And Jane's like, well, that'd be a really good idea. So we got the girls. They're about, I think it was around like 7 or 8 years old. So we went down there. It was a really chilly day. And we requested Elizabeth's room, because it's supposed to be one of the original rooms of the hotel. So we got the girls, got their wind-up cameras, and my friend Jamie, her daughter, got the cell phone, and she was taking just pictures all around the place, you know, before sunset. And we just happened to look through some of the photos, and we seen this, like, a person sitting in one of the rooms, just, like, the head, and, like, barely the shoulder, and that was it. But the face was, like, facing toward the other wall in the other room, and it overlooks the cemetery behind the Rose Hotel. Like, oh my gosh, like, we weren't expecting to go catch anything, like, on film or on the cell phone.
Yeah.
And so, like, oh my gosh. So the girls are really amped up about it. So when night came, we went downstairs, you know, where the museum is, and we took pictures and things like that. And the next morning, we told the lady that was working there, and we showed them the pictures, and she was like, oh my gosh. She said, can you send me those photos? We send them through the text messaging. I was trying to figure out, I was sitting there looking at the face. It looked like an older black man by the facial features. So I went downstairs that next morning. I was trying to find pictures of an older black man, but I couldn't see anything. I mean, I didn't see anything. So the Five Column Bank was open down here in Old Shawneetown, and they had a lot of authors, like local authors, selling their books. And my friend Jamie, she's big in books. So she went there and she bought a book bought it by some other person. And she goes, hey, look, here's a book right here. It's haunted history of, like, Southern Illinois or something. So I was like, oh, that's neat. And she was flipping through it, and the first chapter was The Rose Hotel. And it talked about this black man that was a caretaker of the Rose Hotel. I was like, oh, my gosh. So it had to be that man. That I got the original photo, but I got, like, the zoom-in one that I sent you.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was so neat. I didn't dare tell the people that stayed in that room, though.
Right.
I was scared. They probably ended up packing their stuff up and leaving, but it was very interesting. So me and my friend Jamie, I think we're going to go tomorrow night or this Sunday night. We might go spend the night down there. I don't know yet. We're planning on it. I want to get that room. And it's the room that overlooks the cemetery. And supposedly in the book, it says that man is buried right there in that cemetery behind the Rose Hotel.
The spirit in the photo may just be none other than that of Mr. Tote Wood, a gentleman who worked at the Rose Hotel for many years and is said to be buried on or near the grounds of the hotel, still watching over the grand old building all these years later, and her guests. And it feels somehow right. Ghosts and old buildings, they go together. The spirits of the dead and of history.
Tell you a story that Dad told me, though. I believe it was his grandfather was walking, and back then, this was, I don't know when it was, like the early 1900s or maybe even in the 1800s. He was walking down the road going home, and it was getting dark, so it was like really dim. And there he was walking past this old church, and out of the corner of his eye, he saw something, and he kind of glanced. He was afraid to look at it almost, but it was something moving along the side, following him kind of along the side. And he kept an eye on it, and he kept walking, and it got over, and he said, he kind of looked at it, and it was like a woman in a white dress, but she wasn't walking. She just kind of like floating along. And she got over to where this well, an old well was there that the church used to use, and she just sunk down in that well. And he said he run home then.
So I was in the auditorium of my high school because I was listening to the high school choir sing because I was in the junior high and I had gotten done singing already. And we had walked off stage and we were sitting in our spots last year. And I was sitting and as I was listening to the third song that they had sung, all of a sudden I could hear somebody come up from my left. And it felt like somebody had leaned forward and whispered, "Hey, Lily," and it was kind of like a woman's voice, really high pitched, kind of whisper. It felt really creepy. And I turn around, and the person behind me is sitting completely like, all the way in her seat, watching the choir perform, and I turn and I look to my left and my friend is sitting there and I ask him, "Did you hear somebody say my name?" And he says that nobody said my name, nobody said anything, and nobody had, and like I looked behind and nobody had gotten out of their seats. Everybody was sitting completely still, and I was just really spooked after that. And it felt kind of off, and it was really just weird. And apparently, there's been rumors that the auditorium in our high school is haunted. But people have heard their names been called out. And also, it's also a story of a ghost haunting the first floor bathroom. Some dude, like named Jim or Tim or something, and there's rumors of him haunting one of the bathrooms down on the first floor of our high school.
There was a guy I used to work with, that he was a young guy when his father died. He was just, I don't know, maybe still in high school, I think. And his father died, and he had a, I don't know if it was his brother-in-law or somebody there that was in the, they was in the house with him, you know. And he said he went and just laid down across the bed, and this was after the funeral and everything, and they would come back and they were all there in the house, and he was sad, you know. But he was laying there on the bed, and he felt somebody put a hand on his shoulder and said, "John, I've got to go now." And he just didn't say nothing. He just sat there, you know, because he thought it was his brother-in-law. And so pretty soon he got up and he went in there, and his brother-in-law was still there. He said, "I thought you said you was going." He said, "No, I ain't said nothing. He said, "Didn't you come in there and touch me?" He said, "There ain't been nobody in there with you," he said.
In this world, everyone has a story. And maybe that's what is really at the center of things. No one wants to be forgotten. And maybe, in the end, our stories are all that we have left.
Darkness has finally come to the Riverlands. The daylight hours are getting a little bit shorter. The nights progressively colder. The air is damp. And gone are the days of brutal summer sun and steaming humidity that grind away at your soul, day after day, from July to September. Now that the seasonal darkness is again falling over the Riverlands, the real weirdness is about to begin. For those of you who don't know, winters are particularly unpleasant in this part of the world. They're wet and cold, with more ice than the beautiful snow that one hopes for. It's the kind of place where you're more likely to get mud and slush and sleet than the beautiful white snow for Christmas that Hallmark and television studios promise.
For most of us, this coming time of year is a time for contemplation and a time for stories. So stoke the wood stove, stay a while. We have stories of space penguins, of Operation Paperclip Nazis, of ghosts and monsters and fairies and tales of history and of murder and of mayhem. And of course, more stories of cults and cult leaders from right here in our backyard. So get ready for the second season, stay safe, and we'll see you on the back roads of the Riverlands. Thank you to everyone who contributed your stories and voices for us on this special Halloween night. Good night, everyone.
Shots rang out late one night, late one Christmas Eve. Jimmy Ross took a shotgun and killed his family. He burned their cabin down and burned down to the ground. When the law showed up, he was nowhere to be found. As the news spread, Pike County was in shock. The little town of Bedford was all the talk. In the ashes laid their bones, and a sign reading "Home Sweet Home." Jimmy Ross was on the run and all alone.
The Riverlands Podcast is a production of Riverlands Media, LLC. It is written and produced by Jason and Kayla. Our intro music is by Lobo Loco. You can find more information about our episodes and our show notes over at riverlandspodcast.com.
The outro music used in this episode was The Ballad of Jimmy Rawls by Jeff and Teresa Davidsmeyer.
And if you have a story you'd like to share or a topic you'd like featured in a future episode, send us an email at theriverlandspodcast@gmail.com. If you're a musician and you would like to have your music featured on our show, get a hold of us. We'd love to hear from you. And be sure to check us out on Facebook and Tumblr. Thanks for listening, and good night, everyone.
As the winter's wind blew cold, nightmares ran through his mind. He was running out of time. His family had always been so kind. His cough got worse and his body shook with pain. The weather turned to a mix of snow and rain. He had a shell left in his gun. He was too sick to try and run. He wished he could undo what he had done. Jimmy Rawls was guilty of sin, but it wasn't called mental illness way back then. His hands were stained with blood. He couldn't face a judge. Jimmy Rawls died on New Year's Eve. Jimmy Rawls died on New Year's Eve. Jimmy Rawls shot himself on New Year's Eve.